Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Emily Ellman is an Australian singer and songwriter who has been a defining force in the Australian music industry for over two decades, both on stage and behind the scenes. Emily's lengthy tenure championing artists has seen her curate and program lineups at some of Melbourne's most iconic venues, including the Prince Bandroom, the Gasometer Hotel, and the Toff in Town. Additionally, Emily has programmed some of the country's most significant music events, including Brunswick Music Festival, White Night Melbourne, the Changes Summit, and her own award-winning online festival, Issel Aid, which received the 2020 Triple J Award for Done Good and was named Best Festival at the 2021 Music Victoria Awards. Recently, Emily served as Executive Program Director for Always Live, a Victorian statewide celebration of contemporary music, inclusive of emerging artists through to international icons, from sellout stadiums through to intimate venues, all playing home to these one-off, exclusive, and community-focused events, dedicated to shaping a more progressive, inclusive, and artist-first Australian music scene. Emily's creative output is as acclaimed as her work behind the scenes, with her 2025 single release, Every Hillside, marking her first new solo material in over a decade. Now with her stunning album, Severe Clear, released in 2025, Emily has channeled her passions and creative core into a collection that is honest, intimate, and destined to captivate. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Emily Ellman.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Where in the world am I? I am in Melbourne, specifically in the CBD, and I'm great. Yeah, I feel like spring is kind of springing at last. Where are you, Barrett? You're not in Melbourne, are you?
No, I'm in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Oh, so the accent is like authentic?
Yes. Have you been to South Africa before?
I have not. Oh, I would love to. How do you feel about people imitating your accent?
I haven't really heard it often, and I think people struggle to do so. When I have heard them, it's like, I don't think we sound like that.
Okay, I'll spare you as much as I'm like bursting out of my body to try.
Try. Let's listen.
Okay. Barrett, I can't tell you. I am desperate to talk to you about my music. Would you like to hear some of my songs that I work on by myself?
Definitely the nuances, but so in South Africa there are many different accents. You know, you've got many languages or accents because you've got many people who have English as their second language. So for me, when you spoke right now, you sounded like a Afrikaans person whose Afrikaans is first language and English is their second language. That's what it sounded like for me. I'll give you a thumbs up. That's why I was giggling.
All right, great. You know this song, and then we'll move away from
it. Yeah, sure.
I remember learning this as a kid. Och, man, daddy, won't you take me to the driving? 5, 6, 7 of us, 8, 9, 10. We want to see a flick of bottles and in the air, man. Do you know that song?
Of course, yes. How did you learn that song?
We had South African friends, I think, growing up and I didn't really understand what was being said. I just loved the way that the words were being pronounced.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Okay.
It like occupied some weird part of my brain.
Okay. So Emily, let's rewind. At what age, whether it's a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this music world, and how did that journey progress?
That's such a good question. So I'm one of four girls. Yeah, I had three sisters and my parents, and my parents were music obsessives and were just kind of actually the arts in general, literature, like visual arts, theater, but music was definitely a big part of my childhood and our childhood. So there was always, records predominantly, vinyl playing. And I remember learning how to put the needle down and flip records like super, super early on. And we had all these amazing folk artists and, you know, Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and Peter, Paul and Mary and Woody Guthrie, etc. So I remember that being part of my daily existence. And then when I was about 5 or 6, I found my mum's nylon string guitar. Well, I just found basically a guitar in one of our, like in the linen closet. And I was just like, oh, what is this? And started sort of teaching myself, you know, chords. Very quickly just started making up, you know, very basic songs. And for me, it's a divide, I guess. And I've never really articulated this, but I guess it was a divide between realizing that not everybody did that. Like when I would write songs, I just assumed that everyone was doing that, like, and that was the way they expressed whatever they wanted to say. And so it kind of took me quite a few years to realize, like, oh no, this is a talent or whatever it is, or just not a, you know, I'm not saying that I'm particularly talented, but just like it's something unique maybe, or something that not necessarily everybody does. So it wasn't until I was about maybe 11 or 12 where I realized, like, oh, this is what being creative or a musician might look like.
From that point of understanding that, what were the next steps for you to say, okay, I want to now pursue this?
I never really did. I had books and books and pages of, I used to have like those plastic pocketbooks. And so I would scribble down these songs, and I still have them, like these pages and books and books and books of songs, lyrics and chords and guitar bits that I would scribble down. And for the longest time, I would look at them and I would know what those songs were and what they sounded like. But I revisited a few of those books recently and I was like, I don't know what this is now. But I didn't really start playing live until I was 17 or 18. I think 18 it must have been, because I was in a licensed venue. And that was a big step as well. But almost immediately people responded to what I was doing and how I was doing it. It didn't take long for that to be, you know, I think I played a few open mic nights and then, yeah, was sort of invited back to do my own sets and my own shows. And then just, it kind of took off from then. Met sort of certain people that helped me record.
How do you create a song?
There has to be a feeling. I definitely try to kind of carve out time to be creative in whatever form that might be. It might be my Substack. It might just be writing a particular story or a song. And then oftentimes it'll be like a feeling or a word that evokes a feeling. But it's definitely accessing something back there that I don't really have conscious access to most of the time. Yeah, I haven't really done a lot of co-writing. I've done a tiny bit, but I would really like to explore more of that, because for me, it's such a kind of like bubble, cocoon, solitary experience that I'd really love to, yeah, know what it might feel like to bounce ideas around and make it more of a collaborative and more conscious, I think, in that way.
Now, you're releasing your latest album, your latest work, and when I was reading your bio, it said that it was a decade since your last release. So why the break, and what was the inspiration to say, okay, I'm now going to release again?
I never really decided to take a break after my last record. I continued to play gigs and write songs and continued to kind of internally consider myself a musician, but I guess I also work in the music industry. So yeah, my career kind of demanded more of my time, and I was sort of happily allowing that to take center stage, as it were. And then, of course, the pandemic, and there were just like, you know, time just kind of did its own thing. And then, yeah, I think like creating and programming Isolade, which was an online festival during the pandemic, I was just so immersed in music 24/7, particularly local artists, but just music from everywhere, and just felt like a real sense of definitely inspiration, but more than that, like just I was completely consumed and I just wanted to express that. And so I started sort of writing a body of work in earnest. And then yeah, set about recording it. And I guess that takes a few years to kind of record and mix and master and artwork and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, so here we are, and it's like 10 years somehow.
You referenced that you also work in the industry. In what capacity?
I've sort of done a bit of everything. I started first in music venues, programming music venues. I sort of did a bit of publicity and marketing for venues as well. Yeah, predominantly in the programming space, programming festivals and events and venues. But I've done everything from teach to tour managing to band managing to, did I just say that? No, I said tour managing. Kind of everything, like putting up posters, door work, I don't know, whatever. Like just, I've sort of done it all, and I still do radio. Yeah, but I just supporting local talent, I guess. Sort of very much artist advocacy in whatever way, shape or form.
What does it mean to program a festival?
Gosh, it just depends on what it is, but I programmed Brunswick Music Festival, for example, for 5 years, and then Always Live. Really depends what the brief is. I guess those hyper-local festivals have a particular focus on, yeah, on sort of the grassroots and sort of local community vibes, which is, yeah, incredibly special. And particularly in Brunswick and City of Marybeck, there's just such an incredible wealth of talent that has either sort of grown from that area or moved to that area. And there's such an incredible array of venues. And so, yeah, so I guess it's just a celebration of all things local and music. And so that's a particular brief. But, yeah, it really depends. And that's sort of a multi-venue, two-week celebration. Sometimes it's a one-day thing. Sometimes it's a, you know, 17 days. Always Live was statewide across the state of Victoria. So it often is just, it's very collaborative. It's very sort of consultative. Yeah, it's not really about sort of presenting my festival or my taste or whatever. It's very much like what in the zeitgeist or what in the particular area or remit or, you know, yeah. So it's hard to sort of capture in a particular like job description, I suppose.
And what are you currently doing on radio?
I do a sort of every 3-ish weeks, I suppose, segment on ABC radio. It's just a music segment. So I think there are a few of us that do it. There are 3 of us that alternate. And I very much am sort of the hyper local hype girl. So I always try and play music that wouldn't necessarily otherwise get a spin on ABC. Very independent, you know, I like indie local music. Yeah, just to kind of expose people to new talent. But yeah, I love doing that.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month because for me, it's a thank you energy exchange to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets, listening to song from 1 to whatever number. I'm unsure if you are or not aware, a massive uptick of physical around the world. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK as well, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, which there needs to be a high number every day, they monitor it for some other tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older, inverted commas, nostalgic people. Then we also have Spotify and the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think it's sort of what you're saying. I sort of don't know. I don't have the data in front of me, but I think physical still plays a sort of significant role in the dissemination of music, although that sort of feels a bit more like purist, I suppose. CDs is interesting. It sort of makes sense that that would come back around, but I have found, like, in anecdotally with my records, vinyl sells, but the CDs are a lot slower, if at all. So, yeah, this time around, I'm only pressing vinyl. The digital service providers definitely, yeah. Like, it's interesting because I was reading about how, you know, Spotify were you know, presenting this kind of newer, better way of streaming music that is sort of closer to like just better quality audio, because, you know, so much of it is lost when you hear these digital outlets or networks. So, yeah, I mean, I like anything that supports the musician, and obviously buying music direct from the artist is always going to be the best help. So I'm always encouraging of that, particularly, you know, platforms like Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and any of the things that go direct to the artist are going to be the best. But yeah, I think we're probably due for another, I don't know, a new way of supporting or proliferating or consuming music. Everything's so snackable. Everything's just so quick and short and moving on. And it's just very sort of processed and fast food, fast music, fast fashion. I'm old school. I would love all of that just to kind of slow down and just to kind of, you know, that's why I love like the physical thing, like you were talking about CDs or vinyl or tapes or whatever it might be. Like, you know, so much work goes into the packaging and the ordering of songs. And, you know, I love the idea of people kind of slowing down and just sort of being able to kind of sit with that and just in a really intentional way.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
I don't love performing live. I like it. I don't love it. It's not my, I always think about it in like the, you know, the trifecta of the writing, the recording and the performing. And if it's a pyramid, like for me, the performing live is probably on the bottom of my pyramid. But I love the writing first and foremost. I get such a, yeah, like a thrill, and then the recording. But I like performing. It's just that, I don't know, I'm very emotional and vulnerable, and as much as I try not to be, well, not that I try not to be, it's just like the manner of what I've written or what I'm saying is just, it kind of, you know, it's introspective.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question today, tomorrow, or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time, because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, as I said, top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
Well, actually, I saw Eddie Current's Suppression Ring the other night at their amazing local punk band. They played at Fed Square. So I would definitely, yeah, give them a shout. Erica Avenue, they're a local five-piece all-girl band, indie pop outfit. Love them. Romanie, Romanie's also like similar release cycle. I think her album's coming out early next year. Shout out to them. So many good bands. Field Monuments, they're another local band. One more. Where are we going? Well, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Big Thief, but they're not local. Mm. But Adrian Lakeford does no wrong in my mind. Just the best performer of our time. And let's go with Ella Ion from Adelaide, Ion.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Yeah, no, I want to thank you, Barrett. I just think like any support for local independent, or local to me, but like just any independent artists, you know, there aren't that many platforms. It's harder and harder to kind of get exposure, and so it's awesome. I think what you're doing is great, and I look forward to digging into your back catalogue and seeing who your five artists would be. And yeah, I look forward to hopefully seeing some of your guests play live too at some point. Come visit us in Australia.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.